George circled around the swimming pool fence. The orb of the full moon was like a huge flashlight lighting his way. He looked up at the house and stopped short. His heart leaped. From Missy's, his little girl, from Missy's second floor bedroom window, George could see there's not too much. Get, you know, this is okay. From Missy's second floor bedroom window, George could see the little girl staring at him, her eyes following his movements. Oh God, he whispered aloud. Directly behind his daughter, frighteningly visible to George. You're not interested in this. I mean, this old hat, they made a movie out of this. His heart leaped. He looked up at the house and stopped short. From Missy's second floor bedroom window, George could see the little girl staring at him, her eyes following his movements. Oh, God, he whispered. Directly behind his daughter, frighteningly visible to George, was the face deep bowl. Bowl goes down the snout of the elephant. You should have smoked a pig tonight. This would scare you, you know that? From Missy's second floor bedroom window. He said, why do you go so slow? I want to impress upon you, there's some strange things going on. Don't ever underestimate the devil. From Missy's second floor bedroom window, George could see the little girl staring at him. What would you do? Her eyes following his movements. Oh, God, he whispered aloud. Oh God, he whispered aloud. Directly behind his daughter, frighteningly visible to George, was the face of a pig. He could see the little red eyes glaring at him. Missy, he yelled. The sound of his own voice broke the grip of terror on his heart and body. George ran for the house. He pounded up the stairs to Missy's bedroom and turned on the light. She was in bed, lying on her stomach. He went to her and bent over. Missy, there was no answer. She was fast asleep. There was a creek behind him. Not water. C-R-E-A-K. There was a creek behind him. Beside the window that looked out at the boathouse. Shall I continue?
Yes, sir.
Missy's little chair was slowly rocking back and forth. What would you do? I would set a speed record with Missy in my arm. 6 hours later at 9:30 in the morning, George and Kathy sat in the kitchen drinking coffee, confused and upset with the events that were taking place in their new home. They had gone over some of the incidents each had witnessed, and now were trying to put together what was real and what they might have imagined. It was too much for them. It was December 25th, 1975, Christmas Day all over America. The promised white Christmas hadn't materialized as yet for Amityville, but it was cold enough to snow at any moment. Inside, their three children were in the living room playing near the tree with what few toys George and Kathy had managed to accumulate before moving in 8 days earlier. George figured out that in the first week he had burned over 100 gallons of oil and an entire cord of logs. Someone would have to go and buy more wood and a few groceries such as milk and bread. As you recall, he was freezing all the time in this house, building a fire, constantly turning up the heat. He had told Kathy about trying to reach Father Mancuso on the telephone after the priest had warned him about their sewing room. Now Kathy dialed his number, the priest that is, herself, and got no answer. She reasoned that the priest might not be in his apartment because of the holiday and could be visiting his own family. Then she volunteered to go for the wood and food. There was no question as to where Father Mancuso was on this Christmas day. He was in the Long Island Rectory, still suffering. The flu that he had not disappeared in the 24 hours forecast by the doctor, and his fever had not gone below 103 degrees. The priest roamed his rooms like a caged lion, an energetic worker who loved the long hours he devoted to his calling. Father Mancuso refused to remain in bed. He had a briefcase full of files, those that he had to deal with as a family counselor and those of some of his parish clients. In spite of the pastor's request that he rest, the priest would put in a full day on Christmas. Above all, Father Mancuso could not shake the uneasiness he felt about the Lutzes and their new house. George heard Kathy return from her shopping. He could tell she was back in the van inn because of the grinding sound the snow tires made in the driveway. For some strange reason, that noise bothered him, and he became annoyed with his wife. He went out to meet her, took two logs from the van, put them in the fireplace, and then sat down in the living room, refusing to unload any more. Kathy just fumed. George's attitude and appearance were getting on her nerves. Somehow she could sense they were heading for a fight, but she held her tongue for the moment. She took the bags of groceries from the van, left the remaining log stacked inside. If George felt cold enough, Kathy knew he could go get them by himself. She and George had cautioned Danny, Chris, and Missy to stay out of the sewing room on the second floor without giving them any reason. Now, that's where they'd had a previous strange happening. That made the children even more curious about what might lie hidden behind the now closed door of the sewing room. It could be more Christmas presents, Chris suggested. Danny agreed, but Missy said, I know why we have to keep out. Jody's in there. Jody? Who's Jody? Asked Danny. Missy, he's my friend. He's a pig. Oh, you're such a baby, Missy. You're always making up dumb things, sneered Chris. At 6 o'clock that evening, Kathy was preparing supper for her family when she heard the sounds of something tiny and delicate striking against the glass of her kitchen window. It was dark outside, but she could see it was snowing. White flakes were tumbling down through the reflection of the kitchen light, and Kathy stared at them as the rising wind whipped the snow against the pane. Snow at last, she said. Christmas in snow. It brought a reassuring sense of familiarity to the troubled woman. She recalled her own childhood days. There always seemed to be snow at Christmas time when she was young. Behind her, the radio was playing Christmas carols. She became peaceful in her happy kitchen nook. At 9 o'clock, Kathy went up to the third floor playroom to get Missy ready for bed. She heard her daughter's voice coming from the bedroom. Missy was talking out loud, obviously speaking to someone else in the room. At first, Kathy thought it was one of the boys. But then she heard Missy say, "Isn't the snow beautiful, Jody?" When Kathy entered, her daughter was sitting in her little rocker by the window, staring at the falling snow outside. Kathy looked around the bedroom. There was no one there. "Who are you talking to, Missy? An angel?" "No, Mama. Just Jody." Kathy turned her head to follow Missy's glance toward the corner of the room. There was nothing there but some of Missy's toys on the floor. "Jody, is that one of your new dolls?" "No, Jody's a pig. He's my friend. Nobody can see him but me." Now, Kathy knew that Missy, like other children of her age, often created people and animals to talk to, so she assumed it was a child's imagination at work again. George had not yet told her of the incident in Missy's room the night before. There was another surprise waiting for Kathy when she got to the top floor a few minutes later. Danny and Chris were already in their own bedroom changing into their pajamas. Usually both boys fought to stay up past 10. This night at 9:30 they were getting ready without being told. Kathy wondered why. "What's the matter with you two? How come you're not arguing about going to sleep?" Her sons shrugged, continuing to undress. "It's warmer in here, Mama," Danny said. "We don't want to play in there anymore." When Kathy checked in there, she was struck with a freezing chill in the playroom. No windows were open, yet the room was ice cold. It certainly wasn't uncomfortable in Danny and Chris's bedroom nor in the hallway. She felt the radiator. It was hot. Kathy told George about the cold in the upstairs playroom. Too comfortable with the fireplace to want to move, he said he'd check it out in the morning. At midnight, Kathy and George finally went to bed. December 26. One night, George doesn't remember exactly which, he woke again at 3:15. He dressed and went out, and as he was wandering around in the freezing darkness, he wondered what in God's name he was looking for in the boathouse. Harry, the tough half-breed watchdog, didn't even wake up when George stumbled over some loose wire near Harry's compound. When the Lutzes lived in Deer Park, Harry also had his own doghouse and slept outside in all kinds of weather. Normally, he'd remain awake, on guard, until 2 or 3 in the morning before finally settling down and go to sleep. Any unfamiliar noise would bring him to alert attention. Since they moved to 112 Ocean Avenue, after, I might say, the first night of raging fits when the boathouse was banging around, the dog was now, every night, usually fast asleep whenever George went out to the boathouse. He'd wake only when his master called him. George vividly remembers the day after Christmas, however, 26, because that was the date set for Jimmy's wedding. It was also the beginning of a severe case of diarrhea he developed after checking out the boathouse. The pain was intense at first, almost as if a knife had pierced his stomach. George became frightened when he felt the nausea rising in his throat, and as soon as he reentered the house, he made a dash for the bathroom on the first floor. It was daylight outside when he settled, finally back to bed. "Am I boring you?" The abominable, too. The abdominal cramps were intense, but finally he fell asleep out of sheer exhaustion. Kathy awoke a few minutes later, immediately aroused him to remind him of the wedding. There'd be a lot of arrangements. Before her brother came to pick him up, she'd be busy with clothes and hair. George groaned in his half sleep. Before going down to prepare breakfast for herself and the children, Kathy went up to the third floor to check that cold playroom again. It was still cold inside when she opened the door, but not as icy as the day before. George might not like to move from his fire, but he would just have to in order to check the radiator. It was working all right, but there was no heat in the room. She looked outside, saw the ground covered with slush from melted snow. That settled it, she said. The three kids would stay indoors today, play in their own bedrooms. After they were fed, Missy obediently started up to her own bedroom. Kathy warned her she was not to go into the sewing room, that she was not even to open the door. "That's okay, Mama," Missy said. "Jody wants to play in my room today." The two boys began fighting and quarreling. She got onto them pretty hard. The kids mounted the stairs to the third floor, passing George on his way down. He didn't even acknowledge them. They didn't say good morning to him. I got 1 minute before we join some other stations, so I'm going to skip along. Kathy returned to her breakfast nook. Kathy planned to go to an Amityville supermarket the next morning. She wrote orange juice on her pad. Suddenly, she became aware of a presence in the kitchen. In Kathy's current state of mind over the eroding situation in her family, the tension and the arguments that had developed already, the memory of the first touch on her hand flooded back in another event when a presence touched her, and she froze. Slowly, sensing that presence, Kathy looked over her shoulder. She could see the kitchen was empty, but at the same time, she sensed the presence was closer, almost directly behind her chair. Startled, Kathy planned to go to an Amityville supermarket the next morning, Saturday. She wrote orange juice on her pad. Suddenly, she became aware of a presence in the kitchen. She froze. Slowly, Kathy looked over her shoulder. She could see the kitchen was empty, but at the same time, she sensed that the presence was closer, almost directly behind her chair. Her nostrils caught a sweetish scent of perfume, and she recognized it as the odor that had permeated her bedroom 4 days before. Startled, Kathy could actually feel a body pressing against hers, clasping its arms around her waist. The pressure was light, however, and Kathy realized that, as before, it was a woman's touch. Almost reassuring. The unseen presence didn't give her a sense of danger, not at first. then the smell, the sweet smell, became heavier. It seemed to swirl in the air, making Kathy dizzy. She started to gag, then tried to pull away from a grip that tightened as she struggled. Kathy thought she heard a whisper. And she recalled something deep within her, warning her not to listen. "No," she shouted. "Leave me alone." She struck out at the empty air. The embrace tightened. Shall I go on?
Yes, sir.
I'm reading Amityville Horror, a true story by Jay Anson. They didn't do very good with the movie. I thought we ought to go to the book. Hello, Dallas, Fort Worth, Steubenville, Rochester, and Albuquerque. Are you folks in Albuquerque calling your station and telling them how glad you are we're in your town? You better do it. There's about three people calling and saying they don't like it. That's all. So I'm asking all my friends in Albuquerque, and I've made some quickly, to call the station and tell them you're glad I'm in town. I'm on ghost stories again. This is a Christmas story. The embrace tightened, hesitated. Kathy felt a hand on her shoulder. "You really want me to finish?" Startled, Kathy could actually feel a body pressing against hers. The activity in this house where the terrible murders had occurred, that they had bought as their dream home, was turning it into a nightmare. Not just poltergeist activity. Evil, unseen, though not entirely, presence. Kathy was in the kitchen. She froze. But suddenly she had become aware of a presence in the kitchen. Startled, Kathy could actually feel a body pressing against hers. The embrace tightened. Hesitated, Kathy felt a hand on her shoulder. Then it was gone. All that remained was the odor of the cheap perfume she'd smelled. Kathy slumped back into her chair and closed her eyes and began to cry. A hand touched her shoulder. Kathy jumped. "Oh, God, no, not again." She opened her eyes. Missy was standing there this time, calmly patting her arm. "Don't cry, Mama." Then Missy turned her head to look back at the kitchen doorway. Kathy looked too, but there was nothing there. "Jody says you'll be all right. You shouldn't cry." Missy said, "He says everything will be all right soon." Father Mancuso, the priest, continued to suffer from his sickness. You remember when he came to bless the house, as he went into a certain room, a harsh voice yelled out at him, "Get out!" He too had been under constant pressure. After that experience in the kitchen, Kathy wanted to tell George, her husband, about it, but George waved her off. She heard the boys upstairs fighting and screaming at each other again. She was about to shout up the staircase at them when George bolted past her, mounting the steps two at a time. She couldn't bring herself to go after him. She stood at the bottom of the stairs and listened to George's shouts as he berated the boys. A wedding was coming up. It was on the schedule. They had to attend. I'm going to skip along in the book now. I'm reading from The Amityville Horror, True Story, by Jay Anson. I think I'll have Craig see if he can find this one. We'll see which one we can get first. The demonologist or this one? Oh, by the way, I got that story in the demonologist with Lonnie waiting, haven't I? Keep reminding me. December 27th, the Lutzes returned home from the wedding at 3 a.m. It had been a long night. Some strange things had happened at the wedding. Jimmy, the bride, had had a mysterious disappearance of $1,500, and several other incidents had marred the joy of the day. Before the wedding ceremony, George, the other ushers, and the bridegroom had taken communion in a little church near the manor. During the ritual, George became violently nauseated. When they came home, the wedding party broke up around 2, and the Lutzes, and I'm going to skip along to come to the point I want to get to, the good part, to illustrate what I'm trying to teach. The wedding party broke up around 2, and the Lutzes headed back to 112 Ocean Avenue, their dream home in Amityville. Kathy went to bed immediately while George checked on the boathouse and the dog's compound. Harry the dog was still asleep, stirring only slightly when George called his name. When he bent to pat the dog, George wondered if it was drugs, and he dismissed the thought. Probably just sick. Might have eaten something he found in the yard. He'd have to take him to the vet. The boathouse door was secure, so George returned to the house, locking the front door. The kitchen door and windows on the first floor were all locked. He checked them. George climbed the stairs to his bedroom, thinking about his wife in the warm, soft bed. Passing the sewing room, where so many strange things had happened, he noticed the door was slightly ajar. He thought of the children. One of them must have opened it before they left the house. He'd ask them about it in the morning when they woke up. That night, I'll skip it, Kathy had another strange experience in bed. This time it was like a dream, and another fact it was impossible for her to know. There was a part of the events surrounding the family that had been murdered in this house was revealed to her. When Kathy was in the basement later in the day, checking some things, the front doorbell rang.